Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Chris Evans here with probably the most packed edition of the Best of the Breakfast Show podcast with Sky from Virgin Radio we've ever had to present to you, because so much has happened this week. I can't believe this was all this week. The one and only rock legend Dave Grohl sharing fascinating life stories from his new book, The Storyteller. That seems like a month ago, okay? Not because it was dull or anything like that, just because so much has happened since. Academy Award winning actor Regina King talking about her brand new Netflix film, The Harder They Fall. That was also this week. The hilarious Ross Noble got us laughing ahead of the UK leg of his world tour, Humanoid. Northern acting superstar Michelle Keegan was on to talk about Brassic Season 3, now available on Sky Max. And Joe Gilgan, the co-creator and star of that, was with us too. So all of that and so much more still to come. We better get on with it.
From walloping pillows in his bedroom to walloping drums in a stadium, our next guest has done it all. His book of larger-than-life tales, The Storyteller, is out tomorrow. So get ready for some rock and roll with a man that's literally written the book on it. It's the one and only Dave Grohl!
Good morning, Dave!
Good morning.
Good
How are you?
Good morning. Very well. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Not a bad day.
All right. It's a great day. Any day above ground and all that. That's what I say. So, the Instagram post that became a book, please expand.
Well, last year when the Foo Fighters, we finished making a record, we had booked a tour, we had made videos, we had made movies, we were ready to go. And then the world shut down. And I was terrified that I would have nothing to do. So I decided to start this Instagram page called Dave's True Stories. I started writing these short stories about these incredible experiences I've had, jamming with David Bowie or Prince or Paul McCartney, things like that. And then I realized that I was going to be here a while, so I wrote a book. The end.
Well, just the beginning, to be honest. But somebody suggested, look, this is a book here. And then little did you realize there is a chasm between, no matter how comprehensive and brilliant the posts are, and actually writing a book. How much of a leap was that?
Well, you know, I did it in the same format. I wrote the book in these little short story pieces. And as I was writing it, I wasn't really doing it in any sort of chronological order. And then once I had finished with like 25 or 30 of these stories, I had to sort of reshuffle the deck and put them in an order where there was, kind of an arc to the story. And it was great, man. I mean, you know, anybody that knows me knows that I love a good story. And so putting it to paper actually gave me a little more time to, you know, to kind of think about it and reflect. It was great.
It is fantastic because they jump off the page. So what we've done, Dave, is we've composed, we've constructed 10 sound bites from the book, okay? And we've numbered them 1 to 10 in a lucky dip of Dave Grohl Gold. So you give me a number between 1 and 10. I'll give you a quote and then you can speak to that quote. You ready?
Okay.
Okay, here we go. So any number between 1 and 10, off you go.
6.
6. The Meowing Studio Kitten, page 223.
I was building a studio in my house in Virginia, and as we were doing construction, my mother came over to visit. And we heard a kitten meowing somewhere. I had left the door open for the construction guys. And so I thought that a kitten or a cat had come into my house and had its litter somewhere in my studio. So my mother and I were wandering around the room. We heard it everywhere. And as I was kneeling on the floor with my ear to a wall, my mother walked up next to me and I realized that the meowing was actually her sandal squeaking.
Now, you have an excellent ear for sounds. I'm trying to imagine how meowy a squeaking sandal has to be before it can be confused for a cat.
Well, you also have to realize I'm deaf as a post.
Oh, okay.
So I think that had something to do with it.
That's fair enough. All right, now, I do have a favourite story in this list of 10. Let's see if you pick it. So any number now between 1 and 10, but not 6.
9.
Number 9, isn't it? But it's a cracker. What's the longest flight you've ever been on, Dad?
Every year at my daughter's school, they would have a daddy-daughter dance. And it wasn't required, but you had to go just to sort of prove to your kid that that their dad would always be there if they ever needed him. And so this one year, I checked my schedule and realized that the daddy-daughter dance in Los Angeles was the same day that I had a show in Perth, Australia. So I made the move the show back, and I flew from Adelaide to Los Angeles, spent about, I don't know, 6 or 7 hours, took my kid to the dance, and then flew all the way back to Perth to play a show. But on the way back, I got food poisoning on the plane and was afraid that they were going to pull me aside for fear that I had Ebola and then throw me in a room full of people with Ebola. Then I would get Ebola and I would die at the airport in Australia. But I made it all the way to Perth, walked off stage. I walked off the plane, had a Guinness, went straight to the stage, played a 3-hour show, fell asleep, woke up the next morning and flew back to Los Angeles.
Wow. That is the most rock and roll, unrock and roll, rock and roll story I've ever heard. Yeah. And it's funny because these stories, do you think these kind of stories happen to certain people, or it's just that people who love to tell stories remember the things that happened to them?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I explain it like this. First of all, I kind of live my life feeling like it's happening to someone else because it's so cool. You know, I feel like I'm having this out-of-body experience where I'm watching someone jam with Prince or hang out with Paul McCartney or whatever it is. And so every time something like that happens, I think, oh, this is what I'm going to see as I'm on my deathbed. My life is flashing before my eyes. I will certainly see Prince standing before me in purple pajamas with a guitar, and we'll be jamming. And then we'll be, so in a way, my life flashes before my eyes like every single day. And it's all easy to remember because who could forget something like that?
Yeah, I mean, talking about Prince and McCartney, you know, I've had the good fortune to talk to Paul McCartney on several occasions. He even played in my pub for charity one year because he's such a mensch. I've worked with Prince, but I didn't know him very well. You know, when us mere mortals hear about enigmatic characters, you know, once you're in their inner circle or their trust, is everything normal again, or does the enigma sort of narrative and character continue?
It's never normal. To me, I mean, it just isn't, you know. I could, you know, I'll try to act cool and you know, make it seem like it's not a big deal, but I'm dying inside. I can't believe I'm face to face with my heroes. It's crazy.
So Dave, you're playing here next year. Thank God for that. Any plans ahead of that to warm up for that? Or is that just all cool? Will you be back in the groove, back in the slot by then?
Yeah. Well, I mean, lately we've been on tour in the States. We just did about like 2.5 months in the States.
Right.
And, they're the best shows we've ever played. I can honestly say that. And, you know, the set list is getting longer. The band is playing better. And the audiences are more enthusiastic because I think people missed live music for so long that now, you know, when you jump up on stage with a guitar and you start screaming, everyone starts screaming along.
And how emotional was it for you first time back on stage after the pandemic? It's still here, of course, but once you could play again, what did that feel like, Dave Grohl?
Well, we were asked to reopen Madison Square Garden in New York City. And so, of course, we agreed. And the whole year leading up to that show, I'd been having this reoccurring dream where I would walk on stage and the lights would go down and I would just sort of sit there and stare at the audience for a good minute before I even started playing. And it was exactly that when we got on stage. It was amazing. It was cathartic. It was transcendent. Everybody was so happy to be back. And, you know, like you said, we're not entirely out of the woods, but I think, you know, we're taking steps in this. We're learning how to try to resume some sort of normal life.
Well, here, Dave Grohl, you're a fantastic ambassador for life itself, let alone rock and roll. Thanks so much and good luck with the Hall of Fame.
All right, my man. We'll see you around.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Our next guest hoovers up awards like they're going out of style, and the quality just keeps on coming. Her new movie, The Harder They Fall, is out on Netflix via Sky Q next month. So, ladies and gentlemen, in Hollywood, she's quite simply known as the Queen, which is funny because her name is Regina King.
Yeah, good morning, Regina.
Good morning.
Good morning. This film, my love, this film, how on earth did it come about?
Well, Mr. James Samuel was interested in me playing Trudy Smith. That's the character I play in this film. And we had a call back when I was filming Watchmen in Atlanta, and he was here in London. He's one of your hometown fellas. And and he just totally sold me on it. I'm not a person that's a fan of Westerns, but James is a huge fan of Westerns.
Yeah.
And he just described how he saw this story being told, his vision. And he just kind of like, Jerry Maguire, he had me at hello.
Yeah, well, it's an amazing film. I mean, you know, you can't take your eyes off it. It is a Western like no other. Even if you don't like Westerns, don't worry about it, because this is a brand new genre. And you've said in interviews before, it's so difficult to get involved with anything now that you haven't seen the likes of before. And that is completely justified. So he discovered something about the history of the Wild West, didn't he, that hasn't been portrayed on the cinema, on the big screen before. What was that?
That black people actually existed, and they were...
exactly.
Newsflash.
I know. It's so mad, though, isn't it? Because of how, you know, Westerns have been portrayed. 40% of the population of the Wild West that were involved in cowboys and all that shenanigans were people of color. Of course they were.
Yes. And, you know, when you think about it, just like you said, of course they were. But as we all know, when it comes to history and how it's been written or how it's been portrayed in cinema, there's some revision going on.
Yeah.
So while this story that James is telling is not a true story, if you will, all of the main characters are actual people that existed in history and who actually rode horses or were cowboy and cowgirls, if you will. So it's just kind of exciting to be in this fantasized version of people that really existed. It kind of makes them almost like Avengers in a way.
Yeah, it's honestly, you know, it's like Pulp Fiction meets Hamilton. I absolutely adored it. I wanted to be...
I like that.
Yeah.
Pulp Fiction meets Hamilton.
You can
That's
use
good.
It. But Regina, take it with
you. I'll handcuff that one.
Okay. You're welcome. But like, who doesn't want to be in that saloon with the swing man playing? And I mean, people don't know what we're talking about because they haven't seen it, but it's really funny. It is violent. I know Netflix is trying to push the violence as like a cartoon violence, and it is in parts, but it is pretty violent. It sort of has to be, you know, the origin opening scenes have to be what they are for the rest of the film to sort of to gain the right kind of traction to be as believable.
I don't want people to like leave, you know, hearing us talking about it and just leave thinking violence, because it's funny.
Oh, it's really funny.
You know, it's very cheeky at times. There's it's beautiful to watch. You know, some of the shots and the imagery is just stunning. The music is banging, man.
Yeah, the music is so cool.
Yeah, so cool. So it's fun. I feel like it's a fun watch. You walk away and you do feel like, you know what, I'm going to Google some of those names and look up some of those people, but you feel thoroughly entertained.
What's it like to be on one of those Wild West steam trains? What's it like to have to learn to I know that lots of the cast had to learn to ride a horse and gun tote and everything else. And Idris Elba has an issue because he's like, I am allergic to horses. And if you're allergic to horses, if somebody's been stroking or patting a horse and you then shake their hand, then you will be in trouble just from that kind of sort of once removed transmission point of view. Having said that, it looked like you had an absolute blast making it.
We did have a good time, especially when you consider that we were making a film in the middle of a pandemic. So we are testing every day. We're staying 6 feet apart, just up until, you know, time for cameras to roll. So that puts a lot of, you know, anxiety on the entire crew. But we still were able to get through it and enjoy the time. And as you said, learn how to ride horses well. Some of us, like myself, had ridden a horse before, but, you know, I needed to look cool. Like I do it all the time, you know.
And also, you have the mother of all fistfights, don't you? You and your female co-lead.
Oh, yes. Yeah, but don't give it up. Don't give it up.
Okay,
they've
got
to tune in.
All right, sorry.
They've got to tune in.
I don't know where the spoilers lines begin and end. Sorry, I'm rubbish at that, Regina. I'll take your lead. But all good fun. And where was your Wild West town? Whereabouts in the world was that?
Let's just, you know, this is one of those things like in, you know, middle of anywhere America. So let's just say somewhere middle America.
No, I don't mean sort of factually. I mean, where was it from a shooting point of view?
Oh, we actually shot in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Wow, cool.
Yeah,
cool.
Which is absolutely beautiful.
All right, and you are so in demand, quite rightly so, because you seem to have the golden touch at the moment, and long may it last. And apparently you're working on a 1920s New York City monster movie next, which I love the sound of.
I am. I'm excited about it. It's going to be big and more muscular than anything I've directed in the past. So it should be fun.
All right, Regina. Well, listen, you have a great night on Wednesday, and I can't wait for the world to see this. It's going to be on Netflix on November 3rd. It's going to wow as a world premiere to the opening of the 65th BFI London Film Festival. Have a great one, and I hope to talk to you about your next project as soon as possible.
I hope so, too. It's always good coming and chatting with you. Next time I'll see you in person.
All right, again. Regina. Absolutely. 100%.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
He's been doing stand-up since he was 15 years old, so you know you're in safe hands. Tickets for his UK tour, Humanoid, are on sale now, and here to tell us all about it is the finest thing to come out of Newcastle since brown ale. It's the brilliant Ross Noble!
Good morning, Ross!
Hello,
hello!
Hello,
hello! Well, let's just crack on with the conversation you were all deeply committed to off the air.
Well, you know, bizarrely, talking about cracking on with the conversation...
Yes.
The last time I was here, the last time I saw you all in person, right, was basically I was in to promote the tour that I'm about to start. Literally, it was 2 years ago this week. I was last in the studio.
Wow.
And I said, hey, I've got this tour coming up. Yeah. Well, it turns out that tour is starting this week coming.
Yeah, the tour you had coming up wasn't coming up. Little did we all know. Yeah.
Talk about pause. Talk about stop the clock. Anyway, as I was saying...
No, good, I like it, I like
yeah,
it.
Sorry, yeah,
the, no, let's go with that. Good knowledge, good knowledge. 2 years ago, almost to the day. That's So the tour we're talking about is a worldwide tour. By the way, this is so swanky, it's so fancy. You know, the UK leg of his tour. Not like the Blackpool leg or the Hampshire leg. The UK leg, man. I mean, this is cool.
Yeah.
How leggy can it get?
Well, it was... I had started going to America and that stopped. Everything stopped. So, yeah. It's I'd been in Australia.
Yes.
And then now, yes, the UK leg.
Okay, so, I mean, we talked about it, different jokes for different folks, but, you know, some comedians sort of can run the gamut of several continents, let alone nations. How does your comedy land in Australia compared to, for example, the UK, compared to, for example, the US? Or is it like-minded folks coming to see you and enjoying what you do?
I think it's basically as long as you have absolutely no substance to what you're talking about or specific, as long as it's complete nonsense, as long as there's people around the world who like nonsense, then you're laughing.
Well, because everything is nonsense anyway, because everything's conceptual, isn't it?
Exactly.
That's the deal.
Whoa.
No, but that is the deal, though, isn't it? And so talking good nonsense is an art form. I mean, Seinfeld said, didn't he, his show, the most successful TV show of all time, was a show about nothing.
Yeah. But ironically, it was a show about the human condition.
Yeah.
And there was a beautiful story about how he pitched that, when he pitched it, before they said it's a show about nothing, apparently he went into one of the TV executives and said, it's a show about the human condition. And the executive said to him, but can that sustain 5 seasons? The human condition. Like, yeah, probably.
Well, it's been doing all right for 150,000 years.
Exactly,
I mean, we haven't learnt much.
Yeah.
Right, now you're talking about chickens. So from humans to chickens. So from Humanoid, the tour is called Humanoid, and you can get tickets from rossnoble.com. That's really important. Starts next Wednesday, 13th of October. Lockdown 4, notwithstanding.
COVID-20,
notwithstanding.
Yeah, it's happening. It's unless a comet will be here in 2 years and you go, do you remember when that meteorite hit the Earth? I had to postpone it again.
Okay, so we are human. So our species is humanoid. So chickens would be...
fowl.
Poultry.
Poultry. Is that right? Is that the right collective for them?
Yeah. Avian. They're avian, aren't they?
They're avian. Avianoid.
Yeah.
So let's have an avianoid. By the way, everybody listening, you know, this is a conversation that could have dropped onto the air if I'd have just turned the microphones on, because I don't know what the... I don't know. Right. So it started with Rachel reminiscing about the first time she sort of experienced Ross up close and personal, which was a very enjoyable thing from a comedy audience point of view, performance. performer point of view. Then Ross takes over, continuing, it's a chicken theme, right? Continuing the poultry conversation. And Vassos just piles in over the top of Ross saying, I had an amazing chicken fact this morning. Then he announces the chicken fact, which was unfortunately, disappointingly amazing.
Yeah.
And then Ross says, oh no, and then carries on about the same chicken fact.
Yeah. So Vassos, like, this is...
Well, so your first tour, your first Edinburgh, rather, in 2000 was a chicken related...
Well, why don't we just reenact what happened? Rachel, what was your first experience of Ross?
Edinburgh Festival 2000, the summer I got together with Alex and we went to see Ross's Chicken Master show, I think at least three or four times. And I laughed very, very loudly and Ross pointed me out in the audience.
But by the way, yes. It was called Chicken Master. It had nothing to do with chickens. I built a giant castle that had chicken gargoyles on it. And I walked out on stage and then never mentioned it at all.
Yeah.
That was the...
By the way, for Chicken Master, when? What year was it?
2000.
See Taskmaster now.
Yes.
Change your word, take a third.
Exactly. Thanks, ka-ching. Mm-hmm. Ka-ching.
Right, so then Vassos the Greek piles in with his chicken fact.
I heard a great chicken fact this morning. In 1948 in Colorado, they beheaded a chicken and the chicken... Mike carried on living for 3 years. Mike, the headless chicken, survived without a head for 3 years.
Yeah. To which I said, yes, there's a documentary about that chicken, which is brilliant. They actually they took him on tour. They toured him around.
Not that he had any idea, I would imagine.
Exactly. Was he a rooster?
He's a what?
Was he a rooster?
Yeah.
Egg laying.
I think he supported Ozzy Osbourne for a while.
No, not in 1948.
And when he bit the head off they put a false head on him and then he bite the head off.
Was that a dove?
It was a bat, yeah.
Didn't Alice Cooper bite the head off a dove and then Ozzy Osbourne up the stakes?
Somebody threw a bat onto the stage.
I don't know what happened.
Someone threw a bat onto the stage and Ozzy thought it was a rubber bat. So he bit the head off it and then went... Oh, and it was blood down his face,
right.
And he had to go and get a rabies shot.
Okay,
I love Ozzy Osbourne.
How did they keep the headless chicken alive?
With a pipette.
They put like grain down its hole.
Yeah.
Don't just default to the word pipette because we'll all believe you.
You can always do that. That's what Boris Johnson does. How are you going to sort out this?
With
a pipette.
Articulated pipettes driven by the army.
Yes. They had a pipette for water, and then I think some sort of grain goop that they shoved down there, and they toured around, and people would come from miles around to see Mighty Mike the headless chicken.
Humanoid tour starts next Wednesday, 13th of October in Telford. Tickets rossnoble.com and dates everywhere. I mean, I'll go through them: Telford, Ipswich, Norwich, High Wycombe, Shrewsbury, a couple of nights there, Guildford, Cardiff, Wrexham, Bristol, Leeds, Leamington Spa, Barnstable, Dorking, Salford Keys, Carlisle, Nottingham Crewe, Barrow in Furness, Liverpool, Northampton, Buxton, Glasgow, Middlesbrough, Athenaeum Theatre in Melbourne. Oh, it's a bit far for us, this one. Yeah. So December 2021, Melbourne,
January,
Alice Springs.
It picks up again.
Darwin.
I go back to Australia, but I come back to the UK in...
It's not exactly on the way, is it?
Not really.
you got to Australia for 5 dates.
Yeah, but you know.
Yeah, local, yeah. Yes. Well, they paid the money.
Yeah, but we had to move those dates, I had to fit them in.
I understand, it's fine. Aberdeen in January next year. Edinburgh, Newcastle, 3 nights. Sheffield, Doncaster, Kingsland, Halifax, Lancaster, York, Manchester. You know how Britain works. It's more of Britain.
Exactly.
Thanks, Ross.
Thanks, family.
Okay, you're absolutely awesome.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
All right, I tell you it's a busy one. We've heard from a bunch of sensational guests already, but still to come. The hilarious acting brilliance of Joe Gilgan filling us in the only candid way he knows how about Series 3 of Brassic. Superchef James Martin making us drool with delicious dishes from his brand new book, Butter, and also with the breaking news that he's bought and now owns Spudulike. Yes, that's actual all the spud you likes. James Martin, by the way. Sopranos legend and legendary rocker Stevie Van Sant came in to take us through the pages of his brand new book, Unrequited Infatuations, a memoir, which is one of the best rock and roll memoirs I've ever read. And the coolest dude on earth, C6 Steve, was also here to talk about his tour. And that tour is called Just Steve, A Guitar and You. It's out next month. You can buy tickets now at c6steve.com. So let's get right back to it, Dapper Dave. Who are we going to talk to next out of that lot?
From Coronation Street to hijinks with a bull, our next guest can do it all. Series 3 of the hilarious Sky Original Brassic starts tomorrow on Sky Max, so please go wild for a Keegan that can't play football like Kevin, but is infinitely more photogenic. It's Michelle Keegan!
Yeah! I don't know, that's a bit harsh, you know, in the 70s, late 70s, early 80s.
Really, even then?
With the perm?
No!
Maybe not. Michelle, how close did you get to the bull? And what happened next?
I got very, very close to the ball. There was a pen in between us, but I mean, if he wanted to get through, it definitely could. So it was very daunting.
Because there's BS, which stands for something usually, but there's another form of BS, which stands for something as far as this opening episode is concerned.
Yes.
Of season 3.
Yes.
We just have to leave that there on
Breakfast
Radio.
It's worth a
lot
of money, let's put it that way.
Yeah,
that BS is worth a lot of money.
Is. Michelle, for people who've just landed on the planet, tell them about Brassic. What is it? What goes on? Tell us about the gang. Tell us who you play.
So I play Erin in Brassic, who is a single mom. She's very strong-minded. She knows what she wants out of life, and she is involved with a boy gang that's basically...
A man gang.
Who... So the lead is called Vinny, and they sort of get into trouble a lot of the time. Petty thieves, you know, petty crime, petty thieves. And yeah, it's based up north. And we have a lot of fun on set. It's a lot of fun.
They're lovable rogues, aren't they?
Lovable rogues, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You know, if you haven't seen Brassic, it's really hard to sort of parachute into your brain.
I know.
What you just have to watch a trailer for it. That's probably... Look.
That's so true.
Tune out of Virgin Radio now, and I don't say this very often, and just watch any 2-minute trailer available for Brassic anywhere
it's
you can.
It's really hard to describe.
But if you watch 1 minute of it, you get it straight
you
away.
You get it straight away. It's like, it is comedy, but there's heart. This heart behind it as well, and it's very relatable. Like the characters are all really relatable, but yeah, it's such a fun show.
Well, it's I think it's testament to the fact that your problems are your problems, and they might seem greater or lesser than anybody else, but you know, 100% of our problems to ourselves are 100% of our problems. That's the way it is, and you know, we exist within our own mind, our own world, our own orbit. You are your five closest friends, etc., and this is all that. The illustration, the composition of this gang from the off hit the ground running, and you know, the opening sequence where we have this time lapse footage of Vinny 6 months in jail is absolutely hilarious. So funny, isn't it?
Yeah, when he's getting frisked.
All of it. When he's saying goodbye to his cellmate. We can only touch upon every single thing we want to talk about, 4-5% of the content of the things we're talking about, because after that we just can't talk about it on the radio.
There's so much.
It's really difficult to interview. I said to the guys before you came in, because I don't really know how we talk about it. Do you know what I mean?
Without giving too much away.
But also without getting... We're taking off the radio.
Yeah, that's so true. It's so true. And I was saying before that you've had Joe on the show, but he can explain it better than me, I think.
You know
what I mean? It's just so hard because there's so many funny moments that you can't really talk about live on air. You have to watch the show. You have to watch it.
I mean, I watched it yesterday afternoon because the twins are in bed. They're only three, but I still thought this might not be good for them within earshot. I know they're only three. They probably can't put these words next to each other and make them... get them in any kind of trouble. So I watched it, and then Tash and I, we have a little sort of half hour now once all the kids have gone to bed, and I've got to go to sleep before she has because we get up at silly o'clock. And then I already could reference with time codes the funniest bit of the first episode, so I just showed her those. She went, "This is hilarious."
Which bits did you think were the funniest?
Well, the first bit I had to show was the harvesting of the
BS.
Yes, the BS. I had to show that bit, because so that was the first bit, and also it was the nearest bit to where I'd finished watching the first episode because it happens later on in the episode.
Yeah.
The second bit I went back to the beginning and it was Vinny leaving prison.
Prison, oh yeah.
Yeah.
So funny.
Yeah, no, beyond funny, right? And then the third bit was Farmer Jim. Farmer Jim's exchange with Vinny after waking him up in the train carriage where Vinny lives.
Yes, because in the woods.
I've never heard such an expletive riven exchange between two people that was, again, absolutely hilarious on the on telly. It was just...
So good.
Okay, let me ask you this about Classic. Okay,
go on.
Do they ever feel like, right, on the day when you're shooting it, you know, and you don't know how things play until you read them out loud, do you? So you have your read-throughs and this kind of stuff. But even then, even after a table read or a read-through, you get on set and you think... This is going one way when it should be going another, or it's going another, which is better than the way we intended it to go. Do you ever have the conversation on set, we need to tone this down? Because if you do, goodness knows what it was going to be if any of this is toned down.
It's so funny you say that, because a few weeks ago, we were doing a particular scene and... Yeah, we got told to by the script supervisor to sort of turn the language down. But for some reason, it went in the opposite direction.
Oh my goodness me.
And I don't know if it's because, you know, we were aware of what we were saying then, so it sort of like got out of hand. But yeah, it actually went in the opposite direction.
And the script supervisor thinking, why did I open my stupid gob?
I shouldn't have said anything. Exactly.
It's like...
But a lot of the time, I'll say most of the boys, ad lib. Obviously, they stick to the script, but there's a lot of ad libs going on, which involves a lot of swearing and things like that.
Yeah, we're doing it a disservice, because it's not about the language. It's about the reality of the situation. It's about the tone. It's a drama. It's a dramedy, isn't it? It's a comedy drama, and we know that drama is merely the hyperbolization, the exaggeration of what goes on for dramatic effect to hit the point home in an hour, when it usually might take a lifetime.
Exactly.
That's what drama is all about.
Exactly.
You know, and you do it so well. Michelle, it's great to see you.
Ah, oh, nice to see you.
Seriously, well
Thanks
done.
Thanks for having me on.
Please. Give our love to everybody involved in Brassy.
I will do.
Good luck
with
the house. Come and see us again soon.
I definitely will.
When are you back at the Coalface?
Next week.
All right, great. All right. Cheers, pal.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Dapper Dave, it's over to you.
If there's trouble to be found, our next guest is just the man to find it. The wait is over. Season 3 of the brilliant Sky original Brassic is available in full from today on Sky Max. And here to tell us all about it is a man that gives whole new meaning to the word bullseye. It's Joe Gilgan.
All right, Joe.
How's it going?
Rock and roll, Joe. Oh, man.
How are we all?
I'm very well. How are you doing, Joe?
I'm all right. I just put it out there dead quick before we start. Any language or any blasphemy, you'll have to forgive. Mentally ill and struggle to not swear as I'm expressing myself. So if that does happen, I'm truly sorry to anyone that's overly sensitive.
I like the pre-apology. That is so cool. That helps me out infinitely, I can't tell you. Because, Joe, you are the Virgin Radio 2021 equivalent of the Channel 4 version back in 1996 of Sean Ryder. And that's the way it is.
That's a good one.
This is the language you speak. Joe, congratulations. We have been given the encoded little link, the secret links to season 3 of Brassic. We are absolutely loving it. We don't know where you get the capers from. You keep them coming. I mean, you know, 3 or 4 episodes of Brassic would keep Guy Ritchie going probably for the rest of his career.
Do you know what?
Go on.
Honestly, you're absolutely right. In fact, I'll let you into a little secret. One of our botanical grows that we had, the plants that we used, we had to steal them from Guy Ritchie. And then we had a fight in said botanical grow and sent a load of broken plants back to him. He was fuming.
Well,
there you go, a bit of an in-house story about Guy Ritchie there and stealing his botanicals.
But therein lies a future episode, maybe, perhaps.
Do you know what I mean? Let's get him in. Yeah. The love of God, he'd cost a fortune.
Hey, pal, listen, congratulations. Today is the day. It's the worldwide launch of Brassic Season 3. How does it feel?
Do you know what? It's always a bit terrifying. It's always a little bit... I tend to, like, I push it away. People ask me when it's coming out constantly, and I never have the answer. I think I'm not bad with numbers and dates, any road, to be honest with you, a bit of a drug addict. But I always try and avoid the bloody... You know, just the oncoming onslaught. It's going to be a tsunami, but I'm really excited for it, man. I honestly think the worry is that we've, and I say it sound a bit arrogant, but I think Danny our writer is just getting better and better. Yeah. So I don't see an end. We're a victim of our own success here. We don't know what to do with ourselves.
Yeah, but when success meets you, you know, coming in the opposite direction, whatever that means, by the way, success in inverted commas, you know, if you're doing things for the right reasons and you're all on the right side of wrong, then, you know, whatever rocket fuel was there in the first place gets supercharged. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, it's spot on. I mean, it's all real. Everything you're going to watch, I mean, not necessarily at one in its entirety is real. There's a version of that that was real. It's all based on a truth. So even like the mental health stuff, I've just been as honest as I can with the creative team, with Danny and David Livingston, the rest of them at Sky. And so what you're watching, like, it's real. It's real stuff. And we very rarely stick to the script because nobody wants to learn anything. It's the most wildly unprofessional set. I absolutely love it here, dude. It's anarchy. Any road. So, yeah, there's plenty of reasons to watch it. The one thing I would say is just remember that this is partly autobiographical. It's unique in that sense. And what you are watching is the truth, you know.
Yeah, I mean, if people are late to the party, they've got season one and season two to dive into and enjoy. But it's renowned. Brassic's renown is spreading throughout the world. You know, it's not a sleep hit by any means, but it is building momentum. I didn't get to Breaking Bad until it was 4 years in. And so these things do and can happen and will continue to happen. And we had the lovely Michelle Keegan on the show yesterday, who was awesome. It was the best interview I've ever heard her do. I know I did a bit of it, you know, I asked the questions, but she was on fire. She's in a very happy place at the moment, and she was brilliant. She was brilliant for an hour. We had her on for an hour, and she was awesome. And I was talking about the worldwide spread of the fame, the notoriety, the infamy, if you like, whatever, of Brassic. She gave me her take on it. What's yours?
What, on the fame side of things?
Well, just the fact that it's taken the world, but you're getting fan mail from Russia and from Mexico and from Australia.
Yeah. I tell you what, I actually got a dog jacket. The Russian fans, if there's anyone, any of them listening, they made me a little jacket for my dog Pig.
Right.
He looks like a bouncer. It's amazing. It's the feedback has been insane. I mean, because I don't do social media. I just don't know how to switch a computer on. I still know the Amiga 500 and not much else. But, the feedback's insane. And, people tend to... Do you know what surprises me? Is there's actually a much older audience, grandmas and granddads, that find it hilariously funny, you know.
Yeah.
So that always surprises me. I get a lot of mums asking me when it's coming out.
Yeah. Well, you're speaking to a granddad now. I'm granddad of two, so you know.
I see a handsome granddad.
Very
you're
much.
A handsome granddad.
Thank you. Thank you.
What
very
have
much.
You been drinking?
I have no idea. Well, you it wouldn't be any good for you, Joe. Let me tell you. So Michelle said, ask him about his new tats. But when we come back, when we start filming again, he's always got a collection of new tats. So go on. Fill us in on your
feeling. I'll give you a good one. So I've had a few. I'm in this constant pursuit to ruin my own career, I think, with these tattoos. So my latest one, I got our producer, Mags, tattooed on the inside of my finger, but the M's fallen off, so now it just says Ags.
Ags. Mm.
So the idea was when I'd be smoking in the scenes, you'd be able to see a little name. So that was the most recent, and it killed me. I've covered a few tattoos that were terrible, actually. You know, If you know, your early tattoos are kind of dreadful choices, like Chinese symbols, that it's just an order of rice, you know. So I've covered one or two. I have a big magpie on my chest, and that probably means the most to me because, you know, I'm a thief too. Magpies like shiny things, and so do I. Listen, is this it nearly over now? I'm feeling like we're coming to an end. I just want to say thanks to you, man, because you're so good to us, Christoph. You're a good lad promoting our show like you do.
It's not difficult to promote gold, my friend, let me tell you. I just got to point people in the direction of the gleam, the glimmer and the blinding light from wherever they're sitting or standing. So well done, mate.
Thank you so much, man. I appreciate it an awful lot.
All right, there we go. Live from the set of the filming of season 4 of Brassic on the day that season 3 is available to watch now. That is the amazing Joseph Gilgan, Vinny from Brassic, co-creator, co-writer. Bonafide genius.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Our first guest's magnificent music is matched only by the brilliance of his beard. His UK tour, Just Steve, a Guitar and You, kicks off next month. And to celebrate this morning, we've got Steve and his guitar just for you. Everyone's a fan of this blues man. It's C6 Steve.
Hey, brother.
What's up, my brother?
What's going down, man?
Oh, it's just so nice to be back a little bit. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, you brought the sunshine with you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Any other time you want me, just give me a call. I'll bring some sunshine with you.
Well, you can bring it from anywhere you like, can't you? Because you said, I said, how are you doing? She said, well, I'm a country bumpkin. I'm back in the centre of London. How long has it been since you came to a city like this?
I think 3 years ago.
Unbelievable.
And I haven't, you know, we've been, me and my wife just been in Norway all during the pandemic. So we've been, and we don't know nobody there. So we've just been sitting with each other for a year and a half. So it's just, and then all of a sudden, like a week ago, I played the Isle of Wight in front of 50,000 people. And I'm just like, coming from being, just sitting in my house.
Yeah.
I walked up on the stage and just like, I couldn't hardly breathe.
But it's still a graduated reintroduction because the Isle of Wight is still an island. Still not quite the mainland.
Oh, here I am.
How was the Isle of Wight Festival for you?
It was amazing. It was just surreal. You know, me and Dan, we look out there and just like, because it seemed kind of normal, but obviously it ain't totally normal yet. Yeah. But, you know, we just said, you know what, let's just rock.
Yeah, and there is a, because we obviously, you know, my Carfest, you're the life president of Carfest. We had our first Carfest this year 3 days after the government lifted all restrictions on things such as festivals. So it was touch and go. We built the festival. It took us 2 months to build the festival. 3 days before, we weren't sure whether it was going to happen. And then we were given the green light. And we did have that decompression hiatus, that moment, that vacuum of apprehension. Just as the customers, the clients, the patrons were setting foot on our festival site again. But very quickly, we all got over it. If that's the right phrase, it probably isn't. And we just went back to, not the new normal, to actual normal.
Yeah. 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 I think that's... I was thinking about you guys really a lot when you were doing that, how strange it must have been. But then all of a sudden, you just go for it. Because what else is there?
What else
to do?
Are you going to do? It's like a baby choosing not to walk. That's what those legs are for, my friends.
Yeah.
And so you are. I mean, your country bumpkin qualifications are second to none because you are small village in Norway, surfing village, a community in San Diego, and identifiable community whatsoever in Cornwall. You couldn't be more country if you tried.
Yeah, well, we stay down in Cornwall. It's just a farm. It's just out in the middle of nowhere,
you know. Yeah.
So just ain't no people around. So coming to London is a little bit, I feel. But, you know, when we drove over here this morning, there was no traffic.
I know.
Part of me don't even know where I am. I mean, that drive would have taken a long time, normal. And also, I was walking around yesterday over by Marylebone. Is that how you say it?
Marylebone.
Marylebone. And, I just felt like a Martian or something.
Yeah.
It was cool, but
it's a lot busier than it was. I mean, that's the strange thing. I mean, there's the fuel thing going on as well. So yesterday was ridiculous. I was driving out of London at 11 o'clock on the A40 past Shepherd's Bush and past White City, and there were three cars in front of me exiting London at 11 o'clock on a Tuesday. I'm like, what is going on? I still don't know what's going on, to be honest.
But, you know, I'm so happy to get to play again. And I really feel that the music starting up again, like with Carfest and all these different things, is like medicine for people. People, I didn't really know this, but I see that people need it, man. Like when I would look at the audiences, when the different festivals we play in, you know, they're just hungry for just to have a good time again, and me too, for that matter.
Well, we talked about this on the show today, and we talked about it last week as well. You know, this lovely revelation that has been distilled for us by some very clever people. It's not what you do is, it's what you do does. It's not what something is, it's what something does. And I think that's what we've realized more than ever about music, live entertainment, community, company of other human beings.
Yeah. My brother.
My brother too. All right, so the great news for everybody listening is C16 is playing, is A, alive, and B, playing live. which of those is the biggest celebration?
My wife is, I think, will go with the one about being above ground.
Okay, any day above ground is his favourite saying. Right, so listen to this, everyone. Thursday the 4th of November, Bexhill Dilawar Pavilion, sold out, forget it. Saturday 6th of November, Nottingham Royal Concert Hall, you can go and see C6 Steve. If you live within spitting distance, buying a ticket distance of Nottingham Royal Concert Hall, you need to be there to see this man perform. He will move you. It is the job of people who inspire and entertain and inform and instruct to move you to a better place. He will move you to a better place. So you need to move yourself to Nottingham Royal Concert Hall, Saturday, 6th of November. Sunday, the 7th of November, the London Palladium. Sunday, the 7th of November. It's a school night, Steve. What are you doing to us? We're going to have to come and watch you and just be tired on the show the next day.
I'm going to school the next day, so I don't care.
All right, okay. Sunday, the 7th of November, the London Palladium. See Sick Steve at the London Flipping Palladium. What a laugh. Tuesday, the 9th, Birmingham Symphony Hall. Thursday, the 11th, York Barbican. Saturday, 13th, Edinburgh Usher Hall. Sunday, the 14th of November, the Manchester Lowry venue. That's a have you played there before?
I haven't, none of these places.
That is an awesome venue. Tuesday, 16th, Newcastle O2 City Hall. Wednesday, 17th, Bristol Hippodrome. Four tickets, go to C6Steve.com. All right, you need to see C6 Steve. You need to get him in your life if you haven't got him in before. Is Dan coming with you on the tour?
No, it's just me.
Okay,
just me.
Well, he doesn't stay awake for some gigs anyhow. We know that.
But no, he sleeps.
That's a whole other story. Cheers, Steve.
Oh, man.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
If you're in the market for impeccable rock music or the finest television ever made, our next guest is your man. His memoir, Unrequited Infatuations, is out now. So please welcome a rocking and rolling actor that's the right-hand man for all occasions. Bada bing, it's Stevie Van Zandt.
Morning, Stevie.
Hiya, Chris.
What a legend. I can't believe you're sitting opposite me.
What an intro.
Oh, my goodness. I love your book, man. I love it.
Thank you.
You know, it's often, you know, it's positive, isn't it? Is life, is it a game of skill or is it a game of chance or a bit of both? Your book is a bit of both, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, apart from being part of the luckiest generation ever, you know, I'm also the luckiest guy in the luckiest generation, I think, you know.
Feels like that.
Yeah.
Because you're a super talent. You're also a super fan.
Well, yeah. It starts off as a fan and... you know, the first half of the book is really, you know, local kid from New Jersey makes it in rock and roll, which is a good story in itself. But then, you know, the second half of the book takes an interesting turn, I think.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. You know, let's focus, if you don't mind, we'll start not at the beginning of the book, but we'll go like a few pages in. So tell us about that night at the Ed Sullivan Show, this heady mix, this sort of chaotic cosmos of wonder that was Ed Sullivan, the Beatles, the Rolling Stones and the Rat Pack.
Yeah, exactly. That was my youth summed up right there.
So what was it like? So you were 13 that night the Beatles appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show.
Yeah,
Where were you? What was the buzz before the show, if there was one? What happened during the show? How did you feel? And what was it like the day after in the world?
The thing to remember, in those days, there wasn't that many bands in America. You know, I think England was a bit ahead on with that. But we didn't, you know, if you went to your high school dance, it was an instrumental group that played.
Yeah.
You know, there wasn't people playing and singing that often. So it was unusual just to see a band. And we're there in the, you know, there's only one TV in the house, and the whole family would watch it on Sunday night, a variety show. And the variety shows always had something for every age group. And something for the teenagers that night was the Beatles. Now, we already had I Want to Hold Your Hand was finally released. You know, they turned down the first four Beatles singles in America, the American company. And they finally were forced to release their fifth single, I Want to Hold Your Hand, which which went like right to number one. And so by the time they played the Ed Sullivan Show, this variety show, they did have a big hit in America, and the whole country tuned in, 70 million, 72 million. And the whole world changed that night for me. I mean, it was what I call the big bang of rock and roll, for my generation anyway. I mean, you know, it was the beginning of a new idea that I needed desperately as a kid that just didn't fit in. I just didn't want to go to college. I didn't want to. There was no job that interested me. I didn't want to go in the military. I was too small for sports. What are you going to do? You know.
Yeah. What are you going to do?
You're a freak, you know. And suddenly, here was a new world. You know. And by the time we met the Beatles, now they were quite good. I mean, they were halfway through their career already. Yeah. You know, they'd been together since '57, really, and gone in '69. So in '64, they'd very sophisticated, and they were just perfect. The harmony was perfect. The hair, the clothes. You know, you'd never seen anything like it.
Yeah.
You know, so as great as they were, and introducing this whole new world. it wasn't something you look at and say, well, I think I can do that. You know, it was way too sophisticated for that. 4 months later, the Rolling Stones come. And they make it look easier than it is. You know, they were casual, wearing whatever they felt like. And the hair wasn't really...
Unsmiling.
Perfect. Unsmiling. Very important to me. Mick Jagger was the first guy I ever saw in show business that didn't smile. And that doesn't sound important now. But I wasn't interested in show business. You know, I was interested in a lifestyle. And so when you're not smiling, it suggests something entirely different, mm-hmm. you know. And they were really the first punk band in many ways. I mean, like I say, they made it look easy. They didn't have much harmony, and you know, it was something where you looked at them and said, "Well, you know, maybe I could do that." And so the way I like to put it is, the Beatles introduced an entirely new world to us, and the Rolling Stones invited us in.
Yeah, which is so super cool.
Yeah,
and you know, we often say on this show that the work is the shortcut, or the shortcut is the work. So you got to work, and just sum up the next 5-10 years of your experience learning to play. I know you talk about the craft of playing in your book, don't you?
Well, yeah, I talk about the five crafts of rock and roll. Yeah, yeah. I'm very, very specific. I wanted the book to be more than just, like I say, my own narrative. I wanted to, first of all, a lot of history in the book, because I witnessed most of it, except for the first decade of rock and roll. So you get a lot of history. And I've been involved with a lot of crafts, so I wanted the craft stuff to be in there as well.
It's like a playbook. Yeah. It's like a manual almost. That's what really surprised me about it. And I don't know why, because I was looking forward to reading it anyway.
Yeah, yeah, but that's exactly what I was hoping for. You know, exactly what you said, Chris. You know, that balance between history, craft, and the narrative itself, the story as it winds through. And the first half is that wonderful story. Kid makes good, you know, in rock and roll. But then, after 15 years of trying to make it, and we finally make it, I walk away, and the whole new adventure begins. And that's where I think it gets interesting. That's where the bigger themes come in. You know?
It's funny that's where you finally get us interesting, because that was so different for you. It's all interesting from a reader's point of view, let me tell you. But it's so beautifully written. You know, again, you didn't join the E Street Band in the end by accident, but it wasn't an instant thing. It was something that took its course.
No.
It took its time.
Well, no, we didn't have a hit till our fifth album, really. Yeah. I mean, you know, the third album, Born to Run, made a little noise. Then Darkness on the Edge of Town, the fourth album, was less popular.
But also you becoming part of the E Street Band wasn't an instantaneous...
Oh, no. I was in Southside joining Asbury Jukes. We had started that band. And Bruce was just hanging around, and he's like, I got 7 gigs booked for the third album. The record company was about to drop them. And he said, you know, I want to put the guitar down for a minute. Come join me. Be the guitar player. I'll front the band for these 7 gigs,
yeah.
You know. And those 7 gigs turned into 7 years, you know. But it was a whole different persona that Bruce was about to transform into, you know, this front man, you know. Yeah. Which it was interesting just watching my very, very shy best friend, very shy, introverted, you know. Hair hanging down, you know, the grunge, you picture the grunge guys. Well, Bruce and me were grunge before, 20 years before grunge.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Dapper Dave, give him the big intro.
Find someone that looks at you the same way our next guest looks at a knob of butter. His mouth-watering new book, simply titled Butter, is out next Thursday. And take our word for it, we have a copy, so we can believe it's butter. Ladies and gentlemen, it's the most delicious of all the spreads. James Martin! Martin.
Good morning, James.
Good morning.
Oh, what a book this is. So first of all, you know, there's what you can, how you can cook with butter. But the first half of the book is about all the different butters.
Yeah, butter is not just butter. It tells you how easy it is to make. A lot of people don't know what it is.
Yeah.
So it goes, the first recipe in there is how easy it is to make. And then it goes through the process that butter is not just butter. Treat it like olive oil. There's so many different types, so many different flavours. It's all to do with the grass that it's grown on, the food that it eats and everything else. And you just produce, we've produced some amazing stuff in this country.
But also how you serve it up, what you serve it on. You know, you can serve it on a cedar slate, or you can serve it in some kind of wax-proof paper, or in a sort of kind of rustic dish, or, you know, behind some kind of sort of fancy sort of French ornate glass bowl. You got Café de Paris butter, talking about that. You got carrot and coriander butter. My mouth is so watering. Chili butter, lemon and herb butter. These are all in the book. Maitre d'hotel butter. You got chipotle butter and lime. You got pink peppercorn butter, Marmite butter, red wine butter. roast garlic. It goes on and on. Roast garlic butter. And how to make them, by the way. How to make these butters. Make your own butter. Do it today. Roast red pepper butter. I literally can't speak. I can't speak. I've never salivated so much in a conversation on the radio. Shellfish butter, seaweed butter, miso butter, wild garlic butter, taramasalata, and chicken skin butter. It just goes on and on and on. If you had to have one butter before you die, James, or is this even a question? Does it even have an answer? What might that be?
There are so many different ones. I brought a few in for you as well. We got the classic Ecure, the French one, which is a little bit of sea salt. Best sea salt in the world, as we know, is the fleur de sel from the Camargue. So try a little bit
okay,
of that
let's
one.
Let's have this on. Right.
Try now, a little bit of that one.
The bread you brought us in, I presume that's a sourdough and the other one's a brioche, is that right?
My guys in the kitchen made a nice little sourdough and we've made a nice little a little bit of brioche to go with it, but just have a taste. But you'll see straight away that it's not the normal stuff that you buy in the supermarket. If you taste if you look at it as a raw material and taste it, that's just one. It gets better.
Yeah.
Then you go the Bungay butter, which we've got in here, which is made in the UK. Sorry, it's unpasteurised, but when you taste it, it's got a shorter shelf life, but when you taste it, it's just unbelievable.
I'm ashamed of my shelf life.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Just taste that one. I'm taking you a little bit around the country now.
You are, and I can tell.
Yeah.
Wow.
And of course, butter changes from season to season. In the summer, it's a bit like cheese. Cheddar cheese is not the same in the summer as it is in the winter, because the cattle's produced.
This is where butter meets cheese almost. I'm tasting the coast here.
Well, it's more or less the same material. So you've just got cream just blended, and that's it. And then I'm going to take you to this. This is probably the most well used butter in terms of the Michelin star restaurants at the moment. It's from a company called Ampersand. They're based in the south. This is what you would use for making. I use this when we're making brioche and you're making laminated doughs. It's got very little moisture in it. You can see the colour on it. It tastes unbelievable.
What are you doing to us?
Oh my God.
Tastes unbelievable. But you see,
this
when you
is
taste
so no- nice.
But when you taste normal butter, you just go, really? And then you taste this.
I dare somebody just open a joint where you just eat bread and butter. You know, and it's called bread, it's B&B or whatever. You just go in there to have amazing bread and amazing butter. And I would have a cup of tea with this. What would you have with this to drink?
I would have nothing with this. Just enjoy it. I'd have more butter.
But what I love about great cake and a great desserts and nice chocolate.
Yeah, but you can have a beer with this.
And butter. You could, I suppose. Yeah. I like the way that if you eat what you're eating first, then if you have a cup of tea, it flavours the tea because of what's on your tongue. Do you know what I mean by that?
Why do you have a glass of this? I've got, look, I brought this. Can I come over and sit there?
Yeah, what? You're James Martin.
Got this.
What's this?
Oh, everybody's at it. Gary Barlow, Cliff Richard, James Martin, Chardonnay Marsan.
Yeah, this is a French company that asked me to do this. They've got 10 of the best chefs in France to make their own wine. Guy Savoie being one of them as well, probably the most decorated chef in the world. And then I was the one that they picked for the UK, and we've gone over there and blended our own wine. So we've got a red and a white wine to go with it. I brought not just the butter with me, but I'm gonna can I officially launch this today? I just wanted to do it. You don't know anything about this. I didn't even tell you.
What, is this something else?
Yes. Do you know in 1974 there was quite a famous high street brand that set up, and then in 1979 it was bought by the a British motoring consortium. And sadly, it sort of demise was about 2 years ago, and myself and a guy called Albert Bartlett, the company Albert Bartlett, we took it over, and we've been working for about a year to rebrand what is and what was Spudulike.
You are having a laugh.
I own Spudulike.
You own Spudulike?
Yes. So I've brought in.
Hang on, I've got to play a record. I'm sorry, I've got to play a record. I've got to regroup within my own head. Jay's one of my best friends. Okay. How has he kept this a secret?
I kept it a secret from everybody.
Hiding under his bushel. Did it have a code name like our brand new Sky TV? Sky Glass, which was known as Llama for the last 3 months.
Project Llama.
So if ours was Llama, yours was probably Alpaca. Was that your code name? Could have been. James Martin owns Spudulike, and it's coming back to a high street near you soon. Is that
in
how you
the next 3 weeks?
Oh, my goodness. Can you stop it?
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Spring Watch, Autumn Watch and Winter Watch. Our next guest does an awful lot of watching. His new book, Micro Life, Miracles of the Miniature World Revealed, is out later this month. And here to tell us more is nature's gift to broadcasting. It's Chris Packham.
Good morning, Christopher.
Good morning, good morning, good morning.
So, thank heaven we moved to a bigger studio 3 years ago so we could fit your book in it.
my big book about little life, yes.
It's beautiful, mate. Tell us more about it. Off you go.
Well, it is a sumptuous book. I mean, some of the portraits of, you know, small animals are astonishing. I would draw you to immediately to page 51 to meet a flea face on. Now, fleas have a terrible reputation, but you've got to admit the statuesque face of the flea is something to behold. Also, on page 193, the gnarled, crusty face of a weevil. So this book gives us insight into little things that we can't see terribly well with our eyes, but also it delves far more deeply into micro life because it goes into the realms of electron scanning microscope. So therefore, we're not looking at close-ups of insects' heads. We're looking at cells and the interior parts of cells. We're looking actually at the structure of COVID-19 as a virus. And this book is an opportunity to delve into a world which is there, right in front of us, living on us and living inside us, sometimes very benignly. Not all of these things are bad for us, of course. And it gives us an insight into that world. And the one thing that is striking about it is exceptional beauty. Close-ups of insects' eyes, the shape of rotifers, tiny organisms that live in water and the soil. It's just exquisite, absolutely exquisite. It makes you feel like picking up a microscope and delving into what you can find in your armpit, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah, no, I agree. I couldn't agree more, to be honest. And, you know, the fascinating thing about it is if we ever doubted that Mother Nature may be too modest for her own good, not too modest for ours, it's in these pictures because, you know, all these microorganisms are design classics. If you look at this massive picture in this gorgeous book of a flea or a bloodsucker, there's so much going on, you know. And if you had any doubt about the genius of nature and the sort of preordained order of nature's design and what goes on with the universe, this puts pay to any of that. None of this has been by accident.
No, it's beautiful. It's sculpted by millions of years of evolution. And what the book also does, of course, is explain how it all works. It's not just a collection of glorious photographs of little things, sometimes very tiny microscopic things. It also explains how they all come together and make our world work. We're delving into the leaves here, the substructure of the leaves of plants. Yes, it's exquisitely beautiful, but without them, neither you or I would have had our breakfast this morning, and our planet wouldn't be in any way functional, and we wouldn't have an atmosphere to breathe. So this book is also about our global ecology and how all of these little invisible things make life work. And that, again, is absolutely fascinating when you go through it.
It is. I mean, you know, if one human being had designed 1% of anything that's on any of the pages of this book, they would become an instantly renowned artist or designer overnight. So, for example, this image of, you know, that accompanies the compound eyes section for, you know, for the Eden Project, see the composition of a compound eye. This hexagonal image or this shape that is repeated again and again and again in nature.
Yeah, it is. And to be quite honest with you, biomimicry is something, Chris, that we use a lot. We do look for nature when we look for structural and other solutions in our life. You know, quite a lot of our technology, I mean, the one that we cite most often, of course, is Velcro. And Velcro mimics the outer covering of some seed cases. And it has that sticky covering because it wants to stick to the hairy legs of mammals and get moved around the planet. And we very often look at nature to at least initiate our design principles. And they work. Because they've been tried and tested by millions of years of evolution. So it gives us a good head start. There's no question about that. But this book gives us a chance to investigate ourselves. You know, we look at in here, I'm looking on another page now, the sensory cells cells inside our ear. Well, you could never come up with this stuff. I mean, I've often wondered what that was like. You know, we try to imagine what we're like inside, and we might have some, you know, idea of our anatomy at the macro scale. We know about our lungs and our heart and so on, our muscles and so on and so forth. But when you look at the sensory cells inside the ear, I mean, again, exquisitely beautiful, but perfect and functional. It really is an eye-opener as to, you know, what's going on just beyond the reach of our eyesight. And that's why I think that, you know, this book is... We've done a number of these Dorling Kindersley books. They're always magnificent. They are the sort of thing that you can't, you know, you put them on the table, you've just got to pick it straight up again and find another page. It's fascinating. It is beautiful, but it's also extremely revealing. It just teaches us so much simple stuff about ourselves and how we function too. I mean, even the cover with the beautiful photograph of an ant supping a tiny little droplet of water. Oh, gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous.
Chris, it's a beautiful book, mate. If mums and dads or aunties and uncles or granddads and grandmas are listening and they want to get a kid they love a book that's going to fascinate them. We've all had books like this when we were kids. I can remember three or four that standout books in my childhood. This is one of them. It is brilliant, mate. Well done.
Thank you. It is. It's exquisite. And it is. But I mean, I think the only thing is, it's not just for kids. If I'd have had this when I was, you know, a child, I'd probably burst with excitement. But, you know, when it came through the door the other day and I picked it up and I'd seen the roughs and been working on it for some time, obviously. But when I actually sat down, I couldn't not get to the end. I just had to look at every page, have to soak it all up.
Yeah, no, let's put that out there. A great book like this, Microlife, is not just for Christmas and it's not just for kids. All right, pal, great to talk to you. This is an awesome book, Microlife, Miracles of the Miniature World Revealed in Macro Form, with a foreword by Chris Packham and put together by his very, very clever pals.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast, and you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.